Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome, Gina, to the Healing Trauma Podcast.
Thank you. I'm so glad we get to do this today.
So am I. I am excited to talk with you. When we talk about trauma and its impact, I don't think I've actually had a conversation with someone about the impact is from generations. You wrote a book, which I read and loved, about generational trauma and healing. Was the title Generations Deep?
Correct.
I actually just bought the workbook because I liked it so much. I want to go a little bit deeper.
Wonderful.
And so maybe we can just start there. Why did you decide that you wanted to write this book about generations?
So it came out of my own story. I'll give the whole title, and then also I want to give the whole title and the subtitle because it holds so many clues to why, into what the purpose of the book is. So the title of the book is Generations Deep: Unmasking Inherited Trauma and Dysfunction to Rewrite Our Stories, right? And then through faith and therapy, which is part of my story. So the reason I wrote the book was because, like you, I always recognized that there was something. We had those words that we used in our family, like, well, you're just like your grandmother, you're just like your great grandmother, or we've always done this in our family, or our family has a history of. And these sort of phraseologies that tossed around, we don't really realize the weight they carry and what we're really saying when we say those things. So in my story, there is a long line of trauma and dysfunction, mother wounds, father wounds, abandonment, substance abuse disorders, mental health disorders, and all stemming from a ton of broken relationships, emotional immaturity, and the way that that transacted from one generation to the next. And really, we are formed and informed by the people who care for us. It's how we learn about safety. It's how we learn about attachment, which is the foundation of all relationships we have in our lives moving forward. It's how we learn to have the script, often invisible, of how we live our lives and what we believe about others, about ourselves, about the world around us, and even about God, whether that is or isn't a part of your story. Mm-hmm. So all of these patterns of dysfunction and trauma that began with my great-grandparents immigrating over from Italy and the things that transpired from there that permeated from generation to generation to generation to me. And then as I began to have children and I recognized I am perpetuating these cycles, and I'm not sure what to do. I don't know what to do. I haven't seen it modeled. I don't know what to do. I know what not to do, but I just keep falling back into the thing that I don't want to do. And so I have to get some help in figuring out how to do that. And then as my journey unfolded, as I got help, as I had support system, for me, part of that was also a faith journey. And that fed into my therapy journey. Those two, I tried them separate. And I found both, like, it was almost like walking with one foot down in a low path and one foot in a high path. And I couldn't quite get my balanced footing. And so putting the two together was a really important part of my journey. And then I realized as I went on, I've always been the person who, when I learn something, I have a passion to pass it on. And this was no different. And so then I decided, okay, well, so how do I pass it on? And then I went and became formally educated. And then from there, that sort of morphed into, I was doing the one-on-one, and then I wanted to do groups. And I had a friend say to me, you know, some people enjoy tending one flower at a time. I think you want to tend a whole garden. I think that's more what you're created to do. And so then I thought, well, how do I reach people that would never sit in a room with me? Or how do I reach people that I could never have a conversation with? And I had a very good friend, decades-long friendship, and she said, I think you need to write the book. Just write it. And so she encouraged me. I had a great support system that encouraged me. And then from there, I want to make a confession here. I tried to write a book that was somewhat separated from my story. I tried to just grab little anecdotes from my story and lean deeply into the science and into the therapy pieces and even some of the faith pieces. And it just kept feeling like a coat that didn't quite fit right. And I think that's why it took so long, because I had to come to terms with, if this is going to be the book that my heart really knows needs to be written, it has to be the whole story. And so then I kind of went back to the drawing board, rewrote, and then that's how Generations Deep was born.
This book, it's very meaty, but not meaty in the part that you don't understand. You know how some books, they just go over your head. Not this. This is deep. That's a, you know, really good title. You're intertwining your story. Then you are also educating. The part that I really liked was after each chapter, you took what was shared and you asked questions back at us. That's actually why I ended up buying the journal, because I wanted to go a little deeper, which it was very unique. And I could tell that this book was not something that was written quickly. There was a lot of work and thought into it. And I really appreciated it.
Thank you. It took as long as it was supposed to take. And I'm so glad you brought up the questions, because it ties into the whole purpose of writing the book, the way that I wrote the book and what my heart was. The idea is that the vulnerability that I have in the book and the way that I share my story ideally invites your vulnerability. And sometimes we don't have the lenses to see, like, what is familiar feels normal. And so it doesn't dawn on us that maybe some of that isn't so helpful, until we can step outside of our own story and see it in someone else's story. And then we go, oh, yeah, okay, so now they've explained not only what happened, but what the consequences of what happened, right? And so now I can look at my own story maybe through a different lens as well and say, I have permission. It's almost like we get permission by seeing it in someone else's story and then having the question asked directly to us. So that was the purpose of that. And that is why eventually the workbook was born. And then after the workbook, we developed groups. And so, and those become such communities of healing that I never anticipated that, but it's been a beautiful, a happy accident from the book and the workbook.
It's so interesting when we talk about questions. I'm thinking back, and you could probably relate to this too, and maybe people listening. When I was younger and I was noticing these patterns that were really toxic, and I would bring them up and I would ask the questions, nobody wanted to touch them. Nobody wanted to explore. Nobody wanted, it was like the door was shut. And by the door being shut, it just keeps when you don't ask questions, you're not going to have answers and you're not going to be able to make any changes. It's interesting that we are now coming to a place where people are asking, even that book that's written that's called What Happened to You? Like there's a reason why we have these patterns and the stuckness and these issues. And it's not that we're trying to blame, we're trying to understand so that we can make some changes for us and the generations that follow. Let's talk a little bit about, I'm curious, some of the things that you started to notice in your own family patterns that were impacting you.
Well, I'm glad you said what you said about your own story too, Monique, because the other thing that I think is important, and some of the listeners this might resonate with them, when no one talks about it, you start to feel like you're crazy. Like you're the only one seeing these things. And it's like the child screaming, the emperor has no clothes. And everybody else is like, what are you talking about? His robe is glorious, right? And so it's the same with these types of things. So for me, it was a lot of the abuse of substances, predominantly alcohol and prescription drugs, that sense of being pushed to the side, withholding affection, using that as a tool of control. Raging was a huge one that I watched. I watched my grandmother do it. I watched my mother do it. And my story is unique in that I am an adopted person. I was adopted twice, actually, but my adoption stayed in the family. So all those family lines were there the whole time, even though I couldn't quite put the pieces together until I got older and I had some more information to do that with. So there was a whole lot of dysfunction. There was broken relationships. There was absentee fathers. divorce, a lot of lying, a lot of covering up, a lot of secrets. As I mentioned, abuse of alcohol, abuse of prescription drugs, and this message that kind of underlying current of we don't talk about things, we don't feel things, but we do use substances. And when I was growing up, the church was also used as a weapon of control. God was used as this, you know, and if you did that, he was always watching, and that did not, there was no comfort in that statement, right? It was like, you better watch what you're doing because he will get you. So using that, like everything was about control, and it was a very oppressive environment. Then as what happens when you get older and like you recognize that you're starting to have a little bit more freedom and there is that piece of neglect, you just run wild and you want run free. But it also opens you up to abuse. It opens you up because perpetrators watch for people who don't have family presence, who don't have those people looking over them, who don't have solid parental relationships. And as a result, it opened me up to abuse, sexual abuse by a father and a family member. And so we can also set our kids up for those kinds of things if we don't have that impact in their lives. And I don't know about the generations before me, if there was some of that, but I suspect with at least one, there was. But of course, like you, things were not talked about. They were not talked about because they carried it around. Just because it's not talked about doesn't mean they're not carrying the pain or the shame or anything. And then it leaks out. It leaks out in anger. It leaks out in lashing out. It leaks out in this rigidity that you approach all of life and all of relationship with. And that's what I saw. That's what I saw. And I learned at a very young age, I couldn't put words to it well until I got older, but I learned at a very young age that the adults around me could not be trusted. And so, which is a terrifying thing for a child who is ill-fitted and not developmentally prepared to make decisions that help you live a healthy and safe life. So rather than going for safety, you go for comfort and familiarity. And so you gravitate towards the things that are toxic. You gravitate towards numbing behaviors and the things that take you out of the fear and take you out of the anxiety. And that was my story.
That makes so much sense. You know, it sounds like, no, we would never be attracted to someone who is like my family member, but our bodies, this is a biological thing, is going to go towards what's familiar. And that's why it's so important to have some understanding of this.
Yes. Yes. Not for blame. Like you said, it's not about blame. It's not about.
So I'm interested in knowing when you started to see these patterns, what kinds of things were helpful for you to make some changes?
Well, when I started to see the patterns, one of the first things was healthy relationships. That was a huge thing for me. Mm-hmm. And for my story, that came in the form of some people that were believers. They were Christians. And so it came in that form for me at first. And I was very hesitant to trust them at all because of how I had been raised. But they were so different from anything I had seen. There wasn't the judgment. There wasn't the, here's the box. If you don't fit in it, then we don't accept you. There was none of that. So that was huge for me. That was a huge corrective experience for me. And then from that, I think that is what helped me form a foundation of safety to explore some of the things that I knew were wrong, but I didn't know how to fix them because there was so much fear around, well, what if I don't use alcohol and drugs and relationships to numb and feel safe and feel right? Like what happens? Like because if I don't have all that, which is also, by the way, a distraction from the work that we need to do. And so not only does it provide a place to hide, but then when we're not in the toxic relationship or we're not using the substance, then we feel shame. And then the shame tries to isolate us from anything healthy. And then as soon as we feel that way, then we drive back into the other things. And so it's like this vicious loop. Being people in my life who disrupted the loop, if you will, and helped me see myself differently than I had seen myself before. Because ironically, even though it was very different in the way it manifested, these toxic relationships that I was in, those people saw me the same way as my parents did, like in a neglectful way, in a means of control, someone to control. I was definitely parentified as a kid. So emotionally, I took care of my parents. And so really these relationships were just a repeat of that. And so to see people who they didn't want anything from me except to see me well, that's all they wanted. Love me, right? And so like the younger version of myself could feel that and was gravitating towards that. And that was what eventually made it safer for me to start looking at, okay, I started with self-help because therapy wasn't really a thing. Like it kind of was, but it wasn't. And then I tried to put a Band-Aid over it and be like these people who had this faith, right? But that didn't work out. Then I went to this crazy hyper spiritualization, spiritual bypassing. It was a different form of rigidity and perfectionism, and it was an impossible way to live. And so then what happened? I felt shame and I went right back into drinking and finding another toxic relationship, which I got out of pretty quickly because those people didn't let me go. And so then really saying, okay, so this isn't enough. I can't just do this thing because there's something deeper that needs to be addressed and I don't know how to address it. And they don't either. Not that they didn't try, but they weren't equipped. They weren't therapists, right? And so then like self-help books were very helpful for me. And they were sort of the gateway for me to say, okay, well, there's this thing called therapy. And I wonder how helpful that might be. And then putting all of those things together. And I know that as we talk, Monique, this is sounding very linear.
I've been talking about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels, with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide and 98% saying they'd recommend it to friends and family. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings, and help you feel satisfied longer, support healthy, sustainable weight management, boost energy, and help stabilize mood swings. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your Hormone Harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with code HEALING at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEALING for 15% off today.
And healing is not linear. Mm-hmm. So just we're having a cogent conversation here, so there has to be some sort of direction to it, but healing is not linear. There is going Definitely. To be what feels like 25 steps back, right? Or mm-hmm. I'm back to square one. And I will tell you, that is a lie. You are never back at square one as long as you take the lessons that you have learned along with you. Because they're going to be what helps the maybe the walls crumble, but the foundation will hold. So if you have those things, you have something to build back up on. And that was a little bit of my story for a little while too. Like the walls would crumble, but the foundation was there. So then I was able to build on that a little bit more until eventually I was able to build something strong. And then from there, I thought, this is just the way my brain works. This I'm not recommending this, okay? But for me, I thought, well, what's the next level to go deeper? I know I'll get a master's degree in counseling. I'm not saying everyone should go do that.
No, but I think a lot of people, many people, I mean, I went into social work too, because I thought that was going to, that's going to heal me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I will say it didn't heal me, like, but it was part of the healing. And so I said the healing because people are always looking for the, when can I be healed? When can I be healed? I think what they're looking for is, when will I not feel this? The goal, that is not the goal. The goal of healing is so that we can feel it and handle it. And so, it doesn't control us. It doesn't overpower us or overtake us. We put it where it belongs. It's not that we may not feel it. We feel it differently. We can make sense of it when it comes up. And we have room and space for new things. Now, it's not the only thing we have. Now we have room for new things, for healthy relationships, for the positive emotions, to let our bodies learn what it feels like to be in contentment and joy and safety. Recognizing that healing, that's a process.
Yes. As you're speaking, I'm thinking, even if you're, especially if you've had that kind of a childhood where your body is used to feeling always in survival state, it can't really be present, or it has difficulty being present. And it's always on the alert, not consciously looking for threat. And so healing doesn't mean that you're not going to have feelings of threat, but it means that you're going to have moments where you're present. You're going to have moments where you're going to do things that feel really meaningful and different. You still may have some symptoms as well.
Yes, that's correct. Right. And they become more manageable, and they become something you learn to sort of, we in my profession, we say ride. You ride that feeling, right? You ride it through, because the going over, going around, going under, that actually makes it worse, right? It's the thing. I just read some new research this morning, which is confirming what we already knew. When anxiety tells you to do something and you do it, you make that anxiety stronger because you've just fed what it's asking you to do. And so we don't want to go over or around or under. We want to go through, because that's how we learn that it won't kill us. We're going to survive. And there is something better on the other side of it.
So true. And it can be a battle, because, you know, our parts are like, no, 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 no. I remember that something similar being very dangerous. No, thanks. I'll go the other way. Yes, you're so right. One of the things that really stuck out as you were speaking about particularly that group of people, I remember from your book, how important it is to have corrective experiences. And these people, it was like your nervous system knew that I like what they're doing. My nervous system, I don't know, I'm thinking of Deb Dana says, how do you know someone's safe? Often your nervous system will have like this feeling of welcome. And I sense that with this group of people. And in my own story, I had the same thing. I had this group of people who were young parents, and they were so loving. And when I would go into the room or just see them, their eyes would open up. They would genuinely be so happy to see me, and my body would feel so good and welcomed. And that, I think, is what you're talking about, because we miss that. And so by them, for you, and you, in your case, when you would be around them and they would see you in a way that you're not used to being seen as someone of value, as someone they were happy to see, that did something to you. Can you talk more about the importance as we're healing to have these corrective experiences?
Sure. So the term corrective emotions comes from Dan Siegel, and he talks about that in his work. I see that as something a little bit different. For me, a corrective emotion is an emotion that you have that corrects something in the present that is maybe driving you towards dysfunction and unhealthy behaviors. An emotionally corrective experience for me is when something happens emotionally that corrects something that has already happened to you. That's the distinction that I make between the two in my book. And so, and I believe that, by the way, the emotionally corrective experience that you have that corrects something that has happened makes it safer for you to experience the corrective emotion. Otherwise, if you have a corrective emotion that is trying to direct a value-based thing, we could say, that's trying to direct you to a healthier choice, right? To away from the dysfunction, you may be shut down by shame, because you can't differentiate between doing something that's wrong and being wrong. So the emotionally corrective experiences help us recognize our value, our worth, like you said, and that it isn't about us being wrong as who we are. It's more about what are those maybe some things we need to change in order to be healthier. So the emotionally corrective experiences, I've had so many of them in my life, and often you don't know what they are until after they pass. And I just had an email this morning of somebody who had been in a group with us a year ago, who said she had this huge emotionally corrective experience this past weekend and wanted to share it. And that was the first thing that she had thought of. But what I will say is, what's really great is you can create an atmosphere within your life that makes it possible for more of those things to happen. When you start to get healthy in your relationship choices, when you start to recognize that certain behaviors are driving you towards people that are familiar, because familiar feels safe, but it's actually dysfunction. And so really having relationships with people who would even be able to provide an emotionally corrective experience is huge. That's like such a big part of it. And so if really what it comes down to is, if something has happened to you in the past, something happens to you in the present that corrects the emotional wound that happened as a result of that. And you can have them with other people. You can even have them within other parts of yourself. And if you are a person of faith, you can have them with God. And so there are ways to create these things in your own life to open yourself up for them. And especially when they are emotionally corrective experiences within different parts of yourself. And I can give an example of that if it's helpful.
Yeah, I want so that we could be more clear about that.
Sure. So for me, and I talk about this one in the book, during the pandemic, we were all looking for things to do to feel connected. And my neighborhood was doing, we have these trails that go through the woods in our neighborhood, and people were leaving things on the trail for other people to find. So it was like all these scavenger hunts, and then you would take a picture of it and you would put it on the Facebook page, and it would just be fun. People were putting up lights in their window, signs in their window, just ways to feel connected. And so I love to paint. And so I decided to paint rocks. And on some of the rocks, there was a message on the back that if you took a picture and posted it, I would send you an Amazon card to get like art supplies or a gift for your family or whatever. And so I turned my entire great room into an art studio, and I had all these rocks everywhere, and I'm painting, and I'd been at it for hours, and I took a break, and I walked in the kitchen and realized I had not done dishes in like, I don't know, 24 hours. And so both sides were kind of full, and I thought, I better clean this up. So I start cleaning up the dishes, and this voice in my head starts yapping at me. What are you doing? Hurry up, get these done. You know what? You need to clean the kitchen too. Why are you wasting time with those rocks? That is a waste of time. You need to be doing these things. Should, all of that, right? And I felt myself like going faster at doing the dishes and getting anxious. And I felt like this frenetic pace starting to swell. And in the moment, I just stopped. And that's what I said to myself, stop. And I put everything down, I took a breath, and I got curious. What is going on? Why am I freaking out like that? What is that voice? And as a child, what came to me was, as a child, it was always about hurry up. Even if I was going to the bathroom, hurry up, so that we could get to the next thing, which was really about my parents managing their emotions because they didn't want to deal with me. They just wanted to go hide somewhere from themselves, from me, from the world. And so that voice that was telling me, hurry up, was not actually trying to hurt me. It was that younger version of me saying, we need to hurry or we're going to be in trouble. So it was trying to protect me, right? Curiosity helped me see that. So in the moment, I was able to say, effectively to little me, we're okay. We're not in trouble. We're not doing anything wrong. There's joy in painting the rocks. They'll get done when they get done. And I left the dishes and I went back to the rocks.
Such a beautiful, I just was imagining it all. And I was even imagining the little part of you inside. I could feel the weight being released and her just going back to having fun and being a child. And that is a corrective experience. Thank you for that example.
Yeah. Yes. Well, they're so powerful. And like I said, we can forge opportunities, because I will say the work I have already done is what made it safe for me to do that. And the fact that I'm in this loving relationship with this amazing husband who has been, in fact, in the dedication, it says, you are my greatest corrective experience. And he has been. And so those kinds of things, right? Yeah. So you can create that for yourself. And I would encourage listeners, now that they know what it is, if they can spend some time just thinking about some of those joyful, connected moments that they've had with people, and really get curious about perhaps some of those were corrective experiences and they didn't realize it.
So good. When you were talking about the hurry up, mm. I am pretty sure a lot of people could relate to that growing up. I certainly can. I think that comes from parents who were in survival and they just fast. And that stays with us. It stays with us. But I love how you were able to get curious. You know, we always hear that word, get curious. And sometimes we're like, well, what does that mean? But really just stop and think about what's actually happening and taking a step back.
Clients. Yeah. And what I tell my clients, Monique, I try to stay away from get curious, because that sounds like you can just go pick it up like from the store. I'm going to go get some curiosity, right? I tell them to cultivate curiosity.
Oh, I like that.
Because you have to, it's like a garden, like you have to water it and make sure there's no weeds and nothing's going to choke it out, right? And so you cultivate curiosity. And when you can do that, it is an antidote for shame. It is an antidote for rigidity. And it's an antidote for judgment, whether the judgment be toward ourselves or towards other people. because when we're curious, we're open. And so we don't really have, like, we're spending our emotional energy on being curious, not on being filled with shame or judgmental or rigid.
I really like that.
There you go.
When I think about corrective experiences, we can't go back to being that child that was neglected, that was hurt, that was abandoned. Parts of that child show up all the time when we get triggered. And so I love the way that we can come back and provide some sort of comfort to that child, getting curious about some of the patterns like we talked about at the beginning. I think what people like to really be left with is, okay, so what can I do now? So can you leave us with, we talked about cultivating curiosity. Can you leave us with something that people can do if they want to? They're seeing these patterns and they're wanting to create some sort of something different for themselves.
Yes. Well, and I'm glad you said something different for themselves, because breaking cycles starts with us first. And then we have a new narrative to pass on. And then it's up to the generations after us what they choose to do with it. And so sometimes we unnecessarily put that pressure on ourselves of, we have to break these cycles because that, and then our kids won't have it, our grandkids won't have it. And of course, that is hopefully the goal, but they will have to make those choices for themselves. So maybe take some of that pressure off yourself and focus on how, when you heal, you will show up in the world differently in all of your relationships, and including the one with yourself. And that's really important. And so you can start by getting honest about what the patterns are. What do I see from one generation to the next? And you can ask the questions if it's safe to do so. If you don't have the means by which to ask the questions, it's okay to say, you know, I think that this was there. I'm pretty sure this was there. And noticing, like, where do you feel it in your body? And recognizing, is it a belief or a behavior? Or is it both? Or is it one that has led to the other? So it could be a belief about yourself, right? Like, I'm only good to other people if I am doing what they want me to do. Like, that's a belief, right? Others might be more behaviorally oriented, like an addiction or workaholism. So maybe, like, also getting curious about, okay, well, what is this rooted in? Is this like a belief that I took on? And ideally the behaviors, of course, they are rooted in belief, but it does start with that belief. And so those are some of the things that you can do. You can ask yourself, what did I need as a child that I didn't get? And what did it cost me? How do I feel that showing up in my body and my relationships? What did I get too much of as a child? And what did that cost me? Or how do I feel that in my body? How does that show up in relationships? How does that drive me in my behaviors? How does that drive me in my connections? And then getting curious about those things, right? And then recognizing where maybe those things have caused your boundaries with yourself or with other people to either be too rigid or to be non-existent or easily violated. And so those are good places to start. And I would say, above all else, do not do this alone. Whether you do it with a therapist, a spiritual director, or a support system, ideally a little bit of all of that, find your people who will help you see yourself differently than you have seen yourself up to this point, so that when you are feeling emotionally low, you can be helped by recognizing that there are people who see that value and worth in you. And that kind of gives fuel to the journey. So I think that's a really important part of it as well.
I agree. I will put a link to your books in the show notes. And I thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Monique.